Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Craig Houston Talks to episode 4. And just before we introduce our guests, just to thank our support from the podcast rooms again here in Glasgow. And we've got a couple of guests, which is a first. It's Gordon and Ian from the Founders Trail, which teaches and educates the Rangers fans and the worldwide public about the history, formation, and early days of Rangers Football Club. So without further ado, thank you very much for coming, guys.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thanks a lot. Yep.
So first of all, before we get on to the Founders Trail, two individuals, you weren't friends through school or anything like that, or as youths, you became friends in your adult time. So just want to tell me how that happened and up to the formation of the Founders Trail.
What happened was I had this burning curiosity for, I was a child, about the Founders story. Like many Rangers supporters, we were given the fabulous publications when we were younger, like Rangers A New Era, Wally Allison, but what I certainly found was there was scant mention of the Founders. You would get a page and a half at most, and I can remember going to my dad and one of my uncles at the time and saying, so what happened to these Founders guys? What happened to them? Did they become managers? And no one, bizarrely, could tell me. It always kind of stuck my mind, and around about 2005, it was still there, and I was still asking fellow Rangers supporters, and nobody seemed to know. Baltimore Publications, there was no mention there what had happened to them after their time at the club had come and gone. So I started researching their story and onto the internet, etc. A couple of snippets of information which I posted onto Rangers supporters' websites. And the reaction was fantastic. And one of the people that came back was Gordon. And Gordon said, look, I've been watching what you've been doing there. He said, I've got an avid interest in this as well. You fancy meeting over a beer and we could exchange notes, see where I've went, see where you've went. And that was in the July 2007, at the Glaswegian Bar. We sat at a beer and exchanged notes, got our heads together, and then started researching more and more. We found ourselves up in the Mitchell Library. A couple of years after that, well, about a year after, in 2008, the journalist Gary Ralston, he contacted us and said, much the same. He said, I've been watching what you guys have been doing, what you've been posting. He said, I've been researching the Founder story, but it's my aim to pull it all together and put it into a book, the Gallant Pioneers book. So we both met with Gary, gave him what we had, he gave us what he had, and it all got pulled together. And in 2009, the book that we'd been searching for as children was eventually published with our research. On the back of that, we then started getting requests from fellow supporters asking if we could take them around a couple of these locations in Glasgow. We discussed it, how we're going to do this, you know, and Gordon said, well, one of us is going to have to do the presenting and the tour guide, and it's not going to be me. So that was a short meeting.
Well done, Gordon.
So we organised a walking tour. We thought it would be good to be a novel idea. Do it in foot. And that was August of 2009. We met at Flesher's Hall and organised a walking tour. But it just wasn't logical. We got through the city centre, and there's a couple of older guys. We really started struggling onto the underground system, up to the West End, and then some bright spark. Gordon here thought it would be a good idea to have a half-time break in a West End bar. That was the end of the first Founders Trail. We couldn't get them back out, you know.
Didn't even make it to Ibrox?
No. Well, we went across in a fleet of taxis across to Creighton Cemetery, but people were just wanting to go for more beer, you know, and I said, right, that was the end of that. I had employment history with the bus industry in Glasgow, and I knew the guy that was running the city sites, you know, top buses at the time. So I approached Donald with the idea of moving it from the street onto the bus. He said, no, that's not going to happen. He says, there's no one where the bus is going to be in the city centre full of drunken football fans. And I said, well, it'll not be like that. I said, it'll be more reserved. You know, it's a historical tour. Please just let us do one. And they gave us a bus. It sold out and it snowballed incredibly.
And which so, year would that have been?
That was in the November of 2009. So the walking tour was in the autumn, and then we tried the first bus tour in at the end of 2009. Again, it was, we both said, look, we'll do one or two of these, it will satisfy people's curiosity, and that'll be it. And it just snowballed.
It's incredible. I didn't realise that he's moved on so quickly from your first walking tour to the buses.
The walking tour was a good idea, but yeah. It just logistically just couldn't happen. There's too many
purely
gaps
because
the distance.
The demand that we got. You know, I mean, we honestly did think a couple of walking tours, that will satisfy curiosity, end of story. And I mean, it was never like a business idea. We never sat down and says, right, let's turn this into a business and we could do this and do that. It was purely because of the request from the supporters. And they kept coming back. And then I thought, right, we'll try the open top bus idea. Again, it'll be novel, running about the city centre, you know, and telling the Rangers stories we go. See, and it's sold out. And
the thing as well about the tours is that they're ever evolving. For that first bus tour, it evolved and it still does it to this day.
And is that as you guys just identify more
historical knowledge?
The
stuff that comes to you and it's interesting. It gets in. I mean, there's loads of stuff we could add in, but it would just take forever to get in the whole of Glasgow, just doing a tour.
Gordon's right. There is as much out with the tour that is in the tour that we've got to leave out, because we've gone out about the streets till it's dark, you know, telling the story. There's other locations up in the West End where Tom Valance and Willardon Lock stayed, and, you know, but we managed to trim it all into a tour, and of course touching the four grounds, being Flesher's Hall, Burnbank, Kinnan Park, and then Ibrox, of course.
Because my own memories, I think the twice I've done the tour, maybe about 18 months, 2 years apart, and it's probably just been able to take input and knowledge. But when I done the second one, there was stuff that I'm thinking, did I forget that from the first time, or has it evolved since then? And it's probably just the amount of information that's delivered. But does the script, does the details you're discussing, does it change? Is it fluid, obviously?
Definitely. Even our presentation script changes every other month. We'll add bits in, or we'll find something else. We can go, and I just put in, shuffle stuff around. We've had to change on the bus tour because certain roads have been closed off. It's kind of killed us a wee bit, but we get around that anyway, don't we? We make it fit.
Glasgow City Centre, every time I go in, there's new one-way systems.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
We used to do a kind of like a loop round George Square, but that just can't happen anymore because I've sealed off both ends. So it would add an extra 20-odd minutes onto the bus tour.
The vast majority of the research, which was done by Gordon, is more or less, we say, complete. It's never going to be finished. You know, because every now and again, a wee gem will come to us, and we're off and running stuff. Again, another door will open, you know, and sometimes it's within our route, somewhere we can touch, somewhere we can add on, you know, so it's constantly expanding.
So going back to the research, obviously back then, we're doing it individually and, you know, your own interests. I take it most of it was libraries. Mitchell Library would have probably been a good resource for you. But
anywhere, Craig, because now... We've got accounts with the British newspaper archiving it, which is cracking. They always release new stuff all the time. So there's always more stuff coming in, different publications, you're getting more wee snippets of information all the time.
And how much is the advent and the expansion of the internet been to use, guys?
Huge, because there's stuff that's been hidden away there that comes to light. There's small example, right? I go through different newspaper archives. I went through an Austrian newspaper archive in the 1920s, and it mentions there was a huge article about Ibrox and Bill's Truth in a German paper. Contacted the German museum, sorry, the German libraries, and they sent us over the transcript. That led us on to finding, we knew there was a painting of Tom Valance in Ibrox, like in a life-size one, and this article told us exactly where it hung, the top of the staircase, and the wee stand at the end, which then says, we'll try and find that painting, and that's how it's now up on the wall.
So that information came from a...
It was a newspaper, 1922, so Struth became manager in 1920. This article, German guy came over, done it was like 4 or 5 pages, he described the dressing rooms and how they were training, how the pitch looked, and it mentioned there was photographs of boxers up in the boardroom and all that, these famous athletes, and there was a painting for Tom Valance at the top of the stair. That then led us on to pushing Jim Hann at the time to search for this painting, which they found. We got it restored, and it now hangs above
that, that painting by Tom Valance's hand in Cradle was found in an electrician's cupboard below the west enclosure line against the wall. And Gordon seemed quite right there, that we believed it was still within the stadium, and Jim Hann literally sent it a search party. And then it appeared, but is this what you're looking for?
You know, okay. So what was the interest of this German guy to do in an Austrian paper?
Well, we were a world famous club then, as well as now. Do you know what I mean? They were beginning to go further afield. So they were a famous club, and obviously the German guys there will go and see what's going on. Bear in mind, we did have athletic meets as well, which attracted foreign athletes. So that was that, you know. But it's a crack. I mean, it's a lot of it's in sort of broken English, and that we do the translate. But it's great to see. George Livingston was a player, and he was the trainer at the time. And his favourite way of treating players was to launch medicine balls, throw them at them. Right. Aye, so just things like that. Brilliant wee bits of information.
But what I find is incredible is, I mean, we can now go up the top of the marble stairs and enjoy that lovely painting.
Aye,
of Valance. But if it wasn't for a newspaper article in German in 1921 or 22, that you guys managed to find because of your interest, then guys like me wouldn't be able to enjoy that painting. And that's the things that I just find, it's incredible, the amount of stuff that you bring to the table that let the worldwide Rangers supporters enjoy the club even more.
See, a lot of the wee snippets for newspaper articles are actually jigsaw pieces. The kind of latest update of the book talks about the club being called Western before, right? I found an article, a match report, and it said late Western, Rangers late Western, right? This is September 1873. And I was like, well, what? Was that when we became Rangers? Was that the mystery of 1872? We're called Argyll, whatever other names. And Western was one of those names, and that's when they decided to change it. So that wee thing led on to something else. With an article that said Tom Valance was there. He gave his vote for the name of the club, and Tom Valance arrived in the spring of 73. So all these things. It's a long-winded way of explaining why it was, right? But they all come together, and it's all because of
matching it all, because we'd always knew, everybody knows about the debate, 1872-1873 thing. And we had the articles written by Willardon Law. Willardon Law played in that 1877 team. And he wrote, just ended their first match, played at the latter end of May 1872, 2 months after the inauguration of the club. And that's what we went to the club with, Sandy Jardine in particular. And that's when things started to change. But it had always been niggling at us. Why? Where is this 1873 thing coming? And that was one of the reasons, which Gordon found recently, that we've been called Western at some point during that first year, but then a vote was taken and the name got changed to Rangers. But again, another article we found was founder Peter McNeil from the 1879 AGM, and he'd said the club had never been in such a flourishing condition since its formation in 1872. So it was definitely formed in 1872. There may have been jump about with names, what we're going to call ourselves, you know, and whether they chose Rangers because of the dynamic sounding, you know, because as we said during the tour, a lot of teams at the time were choosing names such as Rovers and Wanderers, and whether Rangers has been the reason we've went for that, then.
So there was a suggestion, I think, a lot of people accepted that there was a book published on the 50th anniversary of Rangers, but it was actually published a year later than it should have, and that was a reason why a lot of people might have thought 1873, but this, with the change in name, that could be another thing that's...
I actually think that's why it was 1923, by the way, was the changing of the name. Obviously, became Rangers in the 1873, and I think that's John Allen's thinking.
So when did you guys find enough evidence to go, no, it wasn't 1873, it was 1872?
There's that many things. We've got that many articles. At the time in the 1880s and all that, there's an advert in the SFA handbook, 1879. The club was formed in 1872.
As an advert Rangers put in, I mean, need to remember that was the founders still having a strong hand in. You know, and I say that article written by Willington Lopp, who played in 1877 team with the founders, the 1879 AGM report, Peter McNeil, his own words, since the club was formed in 1872. There's just no argument against that.
So when did the club stop putting on publications 1873? When did that sort of happen?
I reckon that probably happened sometime in the 20s. I think that's when the book was coming out, and there was supposed to be a reveal of why it was 1873, but it never came about, you know what I mean? John Allen doesn't even cover it in the book. Another wee thing as well, like Ian was talking about Willie Dunlop's article in 1881, that was another piece of the jigsaw that allowed us to know that we're called something else. He talks about a match against Rovers. Rovers was a team that played at Queen's Park and made three matches against them. They were known as the Wee Internationals, and they were famous. There was no winners. There were three games were drawn. They played at Glasgow Green, Southside Park, Queen's Park, in Glasgow Green. And we found one of the match reports. It doesn't name any players, but a Rovers and Western match was played, a draw at Glasgow Green. So that was the thing. But then later on, we had a match report with Rangers versus Rovers. And it was a draw as well. So there's missing result, but that all came within that 1873, the autumn of 1873.
You know, we've always been the impression, you know, that people will just say it's just too anorexic, you know, getting their noses into books. But Rangers is that huge and plays such an important and huge role in all of our lives that we wanted to nail this down, you know. Where did the confusion come from, you know, and when did the club actually play its first game, you know, where were we, you know, and that's what's kept us going. You know, to get things, to get these myths blown apart, trying to get answers to questions that people have, you know.
What do you think would have happened if you two hadn't met?
It just sounds like an internet dating thing, wouldn't it? We'll meet for a coffee. We could be living together the new. Morgan Wise, the Rangers historical.
It's hard to say. Somebody could have come along and done what you've done, you know. But we would like to think, when we wheeled off to that nursing home, you know, that we're going to leave something behind. You know, a lot of the questions have been answered. And there's now places where people can say for certain that's where the founders lived. You know, that's where they worked. That's where we played our first few games, et cetera, et cetera.
We can also as well, the fact that we've added a lot of... we've actually added meat to the bones of each guy that formed the club. We know more about them. We can tell the story a bit more, you know what I mean?
So one of the most incredible things just on that... was we took a picture of all the three of the founders, but there was never an image of William McBeath and again Gordon. Gordon found that, which was incredible. The club had been going 140 odd years, and
was there a William McBeath picture?
And incredible. There was no picture of William McBeath.
Sad as it sounds, we'd finish work and jump up the Mitchell for a couple of hours because I couldn't go to the weekend with the tour of the game, whatever. And one of the teams was up, and there was an article in the Scottish Sport, and it just mentioned that Tom Valance wasn't happy because there was a drawing of him in this publication called The Cheel. I thought that was it. So I thought, I wonder what that was. So I was like, oh, The Cheel, looked up, and the Mitchell's got these hardback books, copies of The Cheel. And basically, it was just a magazine at the time, right, about Glasgow. But they were all bound together for each year. So started looking through them and that, got them out, brilliant. And so you've got like 6 months all bound together. And the very first page, it tells you what's in each bit and what page it's on. And I just seen the name William D. McBeath. So, no way. And flipped to the page, sure enough, there's a drawing of Willie McBeath. And it was like, must have been, I don't know how high pitched the noise was I made when but there must have been dogs up the West End going, what was that, you know?
And of course, my phone goes and it says, tell me the one thing during the research that you want us to find. And I said, right, I have a picture of Willie McBeath. Brilliant. What a, fantastic, brilliant.
But in the upsurge of that there was that we obviously used that image for a long time. When Gary was writing the original book, he was in contact with the McNeil family, and he got the family album up with all the pictures and that, and there was loads of pictures. And I said to Gary, when we're rewriting the latest edition, I said, look, contact him, get some of your photographs. And then they sent him up photographs who they didn't know who they were that were in the book. Of course, I says, there's one of the Beast picture there. And it was the picture that the McNeil family album had was obviously the picture that they gave to the publishers of the Chiel to do their line drawing.
This is original.
Aye. Wow. And the McNeil family album's got William Beast picture on it. And that's where that picture was. And it was just brilliant. You know what I mean?
It's incredible. It's just the background and stuff that just intrigues me.
Well, I've said there's somebody, a guiding hand up there. It's opening doors for us. We've said that often, you know. It's just incredible.
Do you feel a lot of things just really happening weird?
It has done, you know, things like that, you know, and then the match up with the McNeil family album, the fact that the McNeil family had a picture of founder William McBeath within their album. Aye. And as we've often said, you know, sometimes just one small door can open.
They actually had the picture of Tom Valens in the Athletics uniform that was used for the painting. They've got that picture. That was in that film as well, aye. And also had, who else was there? There was George Gowdy's picture was in there. So, I mean, he was obviously knew what they were doing and they'd all the kind of players of the time and that as well that were there.
Now, obviously, I think if you guys stop doing what you're doing today, you've built a legacy.
Aye.
And your legacy is the information that Rangers fans will hold dearly forever, eternity, hopefully. Where do you think the actual tour, the Founders Trail tour will go?
We would love to think, and again, it's we've both got real jobs, as we've said, you know. We would love to think that at some point it could get into the tourist market, you know, and possibly with the museum opening up at Ibrox now. I think I heard somebody mention a couple of weeks ago that the city sightseeing tour that we were talking about there earlier, that's now going to include Ibrox as a stop. So whether it could evolve into that, that would be wonderful, but at the same time, it's still so popular, it's booking out weeks, if not months in advance, you know, and it would take people, maybe if they're planning a holiday, well before, to book a couple of seats. We would love to think that it would expand the story, because the story's that wonderful. Why wouldn't it get out into the tourist market?
I always visualise it as a chariots of fire type film, the founders of the club, but you never know. I'd like that to happen, that's what I'd like to happen. No for us, but I mean, it's something, you know.
Yeah, I think it was one of you guys had mentioned, maybe said it in the tour, but it stuck in my head that Robert Duvall came and done a story in Scottish football and picked a fictional one. It was probably a better story already
incredible.
Written.
We've actually still got that in the tour commentary, you know. He hauled a film crew all the way across from America.
See, I did remember some of it.
To make a work of total fiction, when all along he the greatest sporting or football story of all within his grasp, and he knew nothing about it. He'd done nothing about it, which was astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, it is an incredible story. I was talking to Ricky about this in his podcast the other night. Rangers history is phenomenal. Even if you just took that, probably, I would suggest, maybe up to the opening of Ibrox. Going that journey would take 20, 30 years. Is a blockbuster in itself.
Well, that's basically what we cover, isn't it? That's basically the kind of... Obviously, touch out with it, but that's mainly the kind of the part there. We end up at Ibrox. As Ian said, we actually do the tour in order. So it's like Glasgow Green, Burn Bank, Kennan Park, first Ibrox, then we go to Craigton, and we end up at Ibrox.
As so we keep saying, we're following in the footsteps of the founders, you know. Mm-hmm. And that period, there was things that came as a surprise to us. It still comes as a surprise to many, is the age of the boys. You know, we were the same as everybody else. That 1877 team with the white shirt with the star is imprinted in everybody's minds. And they look at that, you know, but that was 5-6 years after the club was formed. And of course, then youngsters, same as it is nowadays, they're trying to make themselves look a wee bit older, you know, and they do. But the age, when we found out, you know, that 15-16-year-old,
yep.
You know, William McBeath becomes the club's first ever president at 17, which is just absolutely astonishing. Mm. And it shows you the hands-on approach that they had, that there was many clubs formed. That new, I'll say this during the tour, that new sport association football exploded in Glasgow. There was many clubs formed, and it just went to the wall kind of pretty quick, within 6 months to a year. And that was something else that was always playing in my mind. Why Rangers? Why no Queen's Park? Why no Partick Thistle, Clyde? Why Rangers? And then as we started digging in deeper into the story, it was becoming apparent that they were working at this. What Wally Dunlop again in that article says, they were training 6 nights a week to achieve their golden grail. And if it wasn't for the frustration of the Sabbath, they would have trained on a seventh night. So it wasn't enough for them just to compete. They wanted to be the best at what they could do. And then they were taking up those positions of responsibility at the club. 15 and 16 year olds. It was incredible.
See, back then, they were obviously young kids, started a football team. Was that unique, or was the average age of the players they were playing against similar to their ages?
No, I think they were, well, we don't know if I mean, but I think most of our established teams were playing against, so they were probably older guys. I think they were really interested in keeping the team as young as possible. I'll let Ian tell the story of Willie McNeil.
Yeah, Willie McNeil, Moses' brother, he was gifted a ball. Yeah, John McDonald, this is a guy who employed his father at Belmore House. That was a family home at the time. Today, that's part of the Faslane Naval Base. So, Willie had a ball, and then they went down Fleshers Hall, and his friends, brothers, and teammates decided he was too old to play. Willie was 19, and that led to Willie storming off to Fleshers Hall. And that, what a wonderful story. Well, if I'm not playing near, there's my ball. And then Gordon went on to found an article that went on to tell how founder Willie McBeath eventually gave him money to get the ball from him. But yeah, 19-year-old, and he was deemed to be too old to be playing in the team. One of the reports for the 1877 Cup final describing that they got there incredibly to face Vale of Leaving, and Vale were always described as the mighty Vale. And one of the reports has said it was literally men against boys. So the other teams must have been, you know.
Yeah. That game was the game that propelled the club into the next level, without a doubt. They never won the cup, but they played three games. They were getting carried off at the end of the game because they were such young boys against men. And that's this thing we tell in the tour is that they were known as the light and speedy because of the way they were moving the ball about and how fast they were and stuff like that. And that's where the Light Blues evolved from. They were known as the light and speedy for a few years, and that evolved into Light Blues. And as we keep telling people on the tour, we never wore a light blue jersey. We've always worn royal blue. We give it at the end of the tour, we give out replica members cards for 1874. And it tells you royal blue jerseys for white knickerbockers. He's still got his white knickerbockers.
I love all that terminology. See, when you read some of your stats, the match reports, and it's, you know, the knickerbockers and the hoop socks and all that's carry on.
Fantastic.
So, I think it's fair to guess that finding the McBeath picture was quite a big wow moment for you, because I was going to ask you what was your highlights, all the stuff that you've uncovered. Is that fair to say?
I think the first McBeath drawing was a wild one for myself. But there's been that many as well. I can't think at the top of my head. They'll come to me halfway through this. But that was definitely one of the kind of the big ones, you know. Because when we were doing the update of the book, we were looking for something to carry it as something new, and the Western one was there. But also, we also had the double whammy of having the McBeath photograph, which was brilliant for us, you know.
One of the highlights for me actually wasn't our own research. It was initially the Founders Trail finished at Ibrox Stadium. That was the end of story, and we thought, well, look, yeah, we depart from Ibrox, but the story essentially starts at Fleshers Hall. Why don't we finish it with taking the group into Ibrox Stadium? And we approached the late, great Sandy Jardine, and Sandy said, yeah, by all means, let's do one and see how it goes. We took a full bus in. And then not long after that, Sandy contacted us and he said, look, he said, I've got old club minute books. Sandy was taking everything to do with the trophy room, then done a wonderful job, and he said, look, I've got old club minute books, would you like a look at them? And we were like, is this guy serious, you know? And then he says to his, why don't you come up to Auchinhowie, we'll have a coffee and a chat, and we'll discuss how we go forward with this. And we were like, yeah, great. And up we went, and incredibly, and you'll be able to identify with us, Craig, that was it. We were actually sitting at the table having a coffee with him, and he get the call through that Craig White was putting the club into administration.
You're at Auchinhowie?
You're at Auchinhowie. Wow. The colour drained out of poor Sandy's face, you know, and everything just stopped. And he said, oh, wait a minute here, you know, and we made the excuses and left. And but he's eternal credit. We went up and met him again, and he said, would you like a look at these? And we were like, that would be incredible. And he said, I think it was a Thursday or Friday, and he said, listen, I'm off the weekend. I'm not on Monday, but just go to Argyle reception and ask for the keys to my office. They're in my drawer.
Oh.
And we said, are you serious? And he went, yeah. The wonderful thing about the minute books was there was a monthly meeting held, and at the first page of the meeting, it would give everybody who attended their name and address. And that, again, that was just more locations coming out, you know, and we'll be eternally grateful. Sandy Jarden.
By the way, that was hilarious that day. The 2 years.
Admin was hilarious.
No, that was the second. But no, the minute books, 2 years pulling it back to each one. Look at that there, look at that there. Surprised it was in one piece at the end of it.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
You can actually see, no, that's great about it as well. You can actually see John Allen's, he was ticking things off that were important. So you can see, there's George Gowdy getting £30 that.
Unbelievable.
And it was all, and obviously that was his notes just ticking.
The night they had the meeting to decide to move to Ibrox, the Kinning Park at the time, it's there. Mm. They'd looked at a ground in Strathbungo, and I think it had been noted that the club were attracting a rather unruly and boisterous crowd from the Kinning Park area at the time. And the Strathbungo residents heard the Rangers' intentions in moving there, and they protested furiously. So we then turned our gaze towards the further west in the city. And incredibly, we moved along to first Ibrox in 1887. I think it was 2 years later, the underground system opened. You know, so it was incredible vision with the committee, the grounds committee, as they called themselves at the time. But all of this is minuted. You can see the night of the meeting that they sat and discussed or decided that we're going to go to Ibrox. You know, and hopefully, hopefully, that'll be available for everyone to see when the museum opens. Absolutely incredible history.
And I take it your tour will conclude with the stadium tour and the museum tour as soon as that's opened.
We've discussed that with the club. There's probably the museum tour is going to get done first. We're going to ask people to come along maybe an hour earlier, because at the end of the day, again, it's not all youngsters we take round about with us. At the end of the day, people are starting to flag a wee bit, you know, some folk, and to ask them to go and do the stadium tour and then go and do the museum, you know, it can maybe start making it a wee bit too long, you know. So,
yeah, so you would have an option of doing
museum. If the club done it right, they would ask us to create a voucher or something where they can just use that to go to the museum at any time they wanted to go.
There's been an initial discussion had.
It's a long day, you know what I mean? You know, it is.
And I'm guessing that your relationship with clubs would be great because what you're providing for the club as well, and the knowledge helps.
There's good guys in there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, it's fine.
Natalie's been brilliant with us, by the way. She's good. Natalie Nairn, she's been really good. She's been there. She's done the tour before we even knew she worked with Rangers, and that was open date. She'd done the first one or something. So she's
also done the Foot Soldier Miles as a fan before she even...
Aye.
And back in 2016, obviously the club changed hands in 2015. We took John Bennett, Graham Park, Paul Murray was there at the time, running about on the tour, John Gilligan, and gave them a feel. And then it was a month later, we took, I think it was 32 office staff. Running about. That could probably do with being refreshed. And again, the club have had an initial discussion with us about getting the staff round about, you know, and giving them a feel. It's not just another business they're working in. It's Rangers Football Club they're working for, you know.
Yeah, because you started off the tours, obviously, it was Murray era. And the tail end of his stewardship of the club.
Aye.
Then we hit in the middle bit with Craig White and what we term as the Spibs nowadays. How did your relationship and the tours, was there any effect to them? Did you get the same level of support? Were they
You had a meeting with Craig White, remember that thing?
we actually did. Before the administration, Circus hit the club, Gordon Smith, who you've had on here, he arranged a meeting. He said, look, guys, come in and speak to this guy, you know. And it was the strangest thing ever. We sat there and you could just tell his mind was a million miles away, you know. And Gordon Smith seen us off the premises. We're going downstairs. I think it was yourself says to you, how are things? Because rumours had started to circulate then, you know. And he said, I don't know. He said, his door's just constantly shut, you know. And as you know, you'll know better than anyone what happened after that. And there was just literally no one there. The Commonwealth Games was coming to Glasgow in 2014, and there was all sorts of office staff jumping before they were pushed. And you were literally phoning the office along to make sure our tour was covered, and there was a couple of tour guides who'd been arranged. There's nobody there. Just a phone ringing out. There was offices lying empty, you know, but we were on the verge, I think, maybe taking a break from it. And we got word back from a friend, and I think to this day it came from John Gilligan. Just keep going. Things will get better. They will. Things will turn around. Stick with it. And thankfully we did.
So when did the word come from John? Was this before Admin or after Admin?
After Admin. I think it was remember Charles Green getting into Easdale's time, you know. And back then we were using the mega store as our meeting point, you know, which we thought was a good idea, get people in, get them checked in, and then they would go and spend 15, 20 minutes spending money on the club. And then we got word from Mike Ashley's people that we weren't any longer welcome within the mega store. So we started meeting outside, and then there was a protest, which yourself organised, and we had the passengers standing outside with red cards that we'd literally been sent off the premises. A Rangers tour had been put out of Ibrox with Mike Ashley, you know.
You try to blame me?
it was an incredible time. It was a really worrying time, as you know. But no, thankfully we've come out the other side of it.
We were talking about that earlier on. When was the march with Kinnan Park to Ibrox? When was that?
That would have been, it was a close season.
Was that 2014?
I would probably guess the close season in the summer of 2013, I would guess. I'm not as good a historian as you guys, and that's something that's more in history. So
no, it's just we were talking about it earlier on. We were trying to pinpoint when that was, because you know, obviously spoke on the back of the lorry before we left.
And of course, I just mentioned it about the minute book, that we decided to move from Kinnan Park to Ibrox, and the supporters and also the Sons of Truth, and we're going to organise us to replicate that, and the support marched to Ibrox that day, which was
I don't know if when we organised that, that was the main driver, but I remember at the time of the planning, it became aware, and I thought, no, that's nailed on. We need to do it because we were trying to protect Ibrox at the time. So
that's the journey from
Kinnan Park along Paisley Road West. Another thing that was handy with that point was there's three pubs in a triangle there, which are all Rangers friendly.
I ended up in the Loudon after it.
I remember being in the district before it.
It was funny because it was June, maybe July, but it was the worst day that summer.
It was storming rain, that's right. But there's still an incredible turnout.
There was, and fantastic. There was a guy that was organising it. I was in and out the grapes in the district, and I'm going, there's a few people here. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to look rubbish when we start. Mm-hmm. And then we went up onto the truck that Andy Smiley had got, was with the scaffolding protection in it. And when we got in the tannoy, it was just people, obviously the pub's emptied.
Or in
people
cars.
Coming out of trees and out of showers and out of closes. And I thought, and I,
brilliant.
I remember we were all standing on top of it, and I thought, this is fine. There was thousands. It was incredible as well, because just as we're about to start, the rain stopped. And it might be the same people that were helping that day that you think's helping using your fines.
I had a steward's jacket at that point as well.
we needed something to 300 to let it go, so you might be getting
curtailed under that.
That was wee Sandy's job that day, was to make sure we had enough stewards of the police weren't going to let us go. So thanks for doing that.
No, I was all right.
So during lockdown came, how did that affect you? Obviously, you can't go, and then when you came back out of lockdown,
well, it's kind of still affecting us now, because obviously we had to cancel so many tours, and thankfully people have been really, really good. Not a lot of people wanted refunds; they were happy to take vouchers. which was magic. But they're still using the vouchers now, so we're having to use a bigger coach to get people on because we've got so many vouchers.
So up until today, you're still 3 years later getting affected by the knock-on effect.
Oh, aye. As I say, I don't know how many vouchers we gave it just for the COVID thing, you know. But people were brilliant about it. And that was,
you know, especially that was good. Christmas time, maybe with Father's Day, you know, people phoning saying, now, during COVID, saying, look, will the tour come back? And we're like, surely COVID isn't going to be here forever. Because I want to buy these gift vouchers, but I don't want to lose the use of them, you know, obviously not guaranteed. So,
expressing your love can look many different ways. And with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So those people are still coming back. People are finding them in drawers and things like this, you know, and...
We're still honour them anyway, they'll get honoured.
Yeah, they'll get honoured.
That's incredible that, because obviously you think you got a backlog because of the tours that were cancelled, but you still had people buying tour seats.
Yeah. Oh, I was none.
Well, Christmas and Father's Day and birthdays, they were not cancelled, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And people were buying my book and the gift vouchers.
I think that's testament to the high regard to the Founders Trail then, that people were still doing that and still paying their whatever it is to buy vouchers. That's incredible.
The club advertised it for a long time and that. Obviously, I think it was a kind of build-up for advertising revenues and stuff like that. They were doing us for free, which was brilliant, by the way.
Superb.
But obviously, we knew that was going to come to an end, but it's never really held us back because it's then word of mouth. Not. People want to go and it's there, you know?
Yeah, that's incredible. And then started doing the Restoration of Graves project, which is another fantastic thing that probably a lot of Rangers fans are aware of, but not all of them. So how's that going for you?
Oh, yes, it's going exceptionally well. It was natural when we were doing the research, we would focus on an individual and take their story to a conclusion. And sadly, when we reached that conclusion, we found a lot of these guys lying in unmarked graves or stones that were lying broken, lying in the grass, you know, or some of them that just need a good blast clean and a real lettering. And we decided back, that was 2013-14, you know, to put an appeal out to the Worldwide Drainer Support for donations to start repairing these plots. And without surprise, the donations came in. The Rangers family, they'll always pull together for a good cause. And we started re-erecting these stones and putting stones in. The 1877 team that I mentioned again, that famous photograph with the white jersey and the star, we've managed to locate and restore every one of the players pictured. Except Peter Campbell. Peter, sadly, he died at sea, but we went to Penarth Port where his boat left from, and we got a plaque put up down there in 2016-17, I think that was, for Peter. Since then, it's been 73 plots that the Restoration Project has managed to help restore. During the research within Creighton Cemetery, we'd found an old Rangers player, James McIntyre, and we just actually turned that day, and straight behind him, straight across the pathway from, was the final resting place of one of our fellow supporters, a boy, George Nelson. George was one of two boys that died in Stairway 13 in September 1961, along with another fella, Tommy Thompson.
And the original Ibrox Stars.
Yep.
Sorry about that in the second winter.
And we managed to make contact with his family through social media, and we restored Georgie's stone and the plot. The family, big Rangers family, they live local in about Ibrox. They came along and did the Founders Trail with us. We then decided to expand it into helping those bereaved by the Ibrox disaster. Of course, that was in January 1971, and the project has managed to help 38 families now. Reeves, sadly, through the passage of time, there's a lot of people have either passed on themselves or moved away. And of course, we don't do any work on any plots without getting family permission first. But we've managed to help 38 families. And there's been fundraisers off the back of that. There's a boy, Robert Carrigan, was one of four boys from Kirkintilloch who died. We'd done James Ray's stone. That was one of his friends. His brother was actually one of our bus drivers from parts of Hamilton. And we were sitting, and Billy told us his story, and he said, yeah, it was my brother.
Wow.
And we said, right, okay, let us see the plot. We got it restored, and on the back of that was another boy, Robert Carrigan. His brother contacted me, we restored Robert's. And then Harry Carrigan and his friend, Andy, they said, we're going to have a fundraiser for you in the Kirkintilloch Rangers. And we said, that's very kind, yeah, that's fantastic. You know, I didn't know exactly what they meant. They got an Elvis tribute act along. This was just a couple of months ago.
I remember seeing it.
It sold out within an hour. Oh. And raised almost £3,000 for the project. That kind of stuff's going on, and it's overwhelming. It's incredible. Even players, of course, Colin Steen played an important role that day. We were down doing one of our presentations in Plymouth a few years back, and during the second half of the presentation, we cover the story of the restorations, the before and after visuals are on the screen, and we were going back to the airport on the coach, and Colin shouted us down and says, tell me more. This restoration thing, gave him some more details, went over it again, and then he says, right, you get contact details. A few weeks later, Rangers contacts and said, there's something at a girl reception for you. Went across, and Colin had went and got a top sign with the Barcelona Bears, stuck it into a frame, or it goes to the internet, and that was almost £2,000 raised. Incredible gestures and, you know, incredible generosity with supporters and ex-players alike.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a keen interest when it was the times you were doing Struth's restoration. And it just, you know, dealing with that, it's at arm's length. These guys were right in the middle of it. But seeing the reaction of the Rangers fans, the offers of help for Rangers fans, the offer of financial support.
Definitely.
It's just it's actually incredible that.
Don't get me wrong, the club have said to us on a couple of occasions, look, if the project's ever short of funds, don't hesitate in chapping the door. But we're keen that the work is done and funded by this generation of Rangers supporters. It's our way of saying thanks to the guys that formed the club and many others after them, and also remembering our fellow supporters and their families. That's important to us. You know, it's a nice gesture for the club, but we're saying that we're going to do this, and it's going to be this generation. So when we move on, those that come behind us will be able to see the work that's been done. I say by this generation.
I tend to agree with that. I think it's important. The club, I've had personal situations with the club where they've helped things financially. I've seen it firsthand. But I think it's nice that the gesture's there and that the offer's there. But yeah. I think the fact that it's just done by your rank and file fans.
Right.
And even the guys that, you know, can I do this? I'd be honoured to paint the names in. And
that's right.
All these things that personalises it a lot. And I think it makes the Rangers fans feel part of it, maybe cherish these things a bit more, because it's not the club, and that's no disrespect to the club or the stewardships at the club. I think it's just fact that there's better buy-in
there's a kind of untapped resource with the fans and the club, and a lot of people do the kind of running around Ibrox and all that sort of stuff, a lot of doing the chat rings, but there's a lot of help out there that the club could probably turn to, maybe use. I don't know what it is, but you can just see there, anything we like to do something, there's always offers.
You know, at the end of the day, it's about getting these guys back a bit of dignity and respect, which is important. You know, we do our presentation evenings, we go out to supporters, clubs and organisations, and we show again the visuals during the second half, before and after the restorations, and then we send our donations bucket around about at the end of the night. And that's where the majority of the revenue comes in to let us continue doing the restorations. You know, so some clubs are saying, don't bother with your bucket, we've got a cheque for you. And again, the generosity of our fellow supporters and the other organisations like the Orange and the Masonic Lodges and Apprentice Boys is nothing short of, you know, incredible.
And I think for something that you've not been doing for that long time, but I think it's getting known through, you know, there's very few fans nowadays wouldn't know about that work.
Yeah.
And I've seen it, or, you know, at least know about it. Social media will obviously help that, but it's testimony to you guys that that's became a thing that's so well known around the Rangers fan base. So where are you up to at the moment? What are you working on with the Graves? Is there any that you've got ongoing now that are interesting, or ones that you
there was a Rangers great fella by the name of Nicol Smith. He played in the team that won the first Scottish Cup.
Yep.
And I thought we're first in 1894 and we're first title. He played in that team that went unbeaten, the 18 yeah. league games. Gordon had an idea of where he was in a cemetery down in Darvel in Ayrshire, and we made inroads into that and contacted the council, and there was a plaque. Unfortunately, we couldn't find any current family members, so that stops us with the council actually putting a stone in, okay, because the title deeds have got to be got, etc., yeah, and a family member, but they allowed us to put a ground plaque. And again, it was an unmarked grave, and it's now been marked. So it's constantly evolving like that, you know. We'll just start researching somebody's story. The famous 1879 team, they were the first Rangers team to win a trophy,
aye,
the Glasgow Merchants Charity Cup. And we're going to start focusing on that team now and see where that takes us as far as the restorations go.
And was there a big change in squad between those two?
There was a few extra players. It was actually pretty good, because some good came out of this. Somebody contacted us, and he wasn't sure. He said, I've got this medal. James Drennan, he played in the cup final under an alias because he was still an apprentice. But they had this medal, James Drennan, for that game. And I was like, and I'd been looking for James Drennan's grave for years, and eventually I found it. And I traced his family tree back to this guy, and he was delighted. He's now going to pass the medal on for the museum. So that's him. Now we've got another. We've got Peter Campbell's medal for that same game, and I'm going to get James Drennan's.
Can you guys remember the story about the oldest medal that was in, and they had it hanging on, and somebody found it in a park?
That's Peter Campbell's.
Right.
That was Peter Campbell, one of the founders. That was his medal from that 1879 Merchants Cup final. Yeah.
I had the honour of taking a tour round. We took a group of kids with issues up to the training ground, physical issues, and then we took them back to Ibrox for a tour. And it hadn't long been hung up at the time. So the story was told about this medal and how it, I can't remember the name of the park, you guys will, when you know, it was recently found and it's been donated into the club and it's been put on display. And there was a girl on the tour, it was her uncle, that found it.
Well, and that was, there's a, just recently we done a presentation at the Blue Star club, and one of the guys in there actually played football with him. He worked with the two guys involved in finding the medal. He says, look, I've done a story about it, and I'll maybe let you see it later on. He emailed it. It's long. It's an incredible story itself, isn't it? The what happened to the guy, you know, because he was an Ibrox disaster, wasn't he?
That's right.
What, the guy that found the medal?
Aye, it was the guy that found the medal once. Mm-hmm. Aye. Mm-hmm. And they actually thought he was dead. They took him into one of the I think it was a wee dressing room he was in. One of the nurses clocked his tears running in his face, and he was still alive. Get him out, and that's something, you know. But I like you, it's a long story.
See, the likes of that, and that personal thing with that girl in there that day, it's stuff that I started thinking about it probably about 2013-14 before regime change, and I was like, this is certainly in the days just after it. Rangers are at heart a family club.
With
an international following.
Aye.
Everywhere there's links and stories and weird things that just happen. I've got my own personal one I need to thank yous for. That was the day we took up to Cathcart Cemetery.
We were
looking at the Wilton McCall and
Craig.
The chairman.
Aye.
On a little triangle. And by pure luck, we were looking at Wilton's, and there was the name of his wife.
That's right.
And I thought, oh, that's a bit weird. His wife is called Houston. And the weird thing about that is the fact that she had her maiden name on a stone, that was probably not the normal way people done it. And then I put a wee photograph out one night on social media. I think it was that night after you took me up. And I went, oh, here we go. The one good thing is we've learned that Mr. Wilton had good taste in the women, and thought nothing of it, because they were afraid Largs, and at that time would have been like gone with somebody from Australia. And I thought, because my family were from, you know, Brighton. And this guy grabbed it and went away, and he came back, done a bit of work. That was his hobby, was genealogy stuff. Came back to find out that I was related to Bashir, my great-great-great-grandfather was her great-grandfather's brother.
Aye.
And you're like, all right, you've no blood to Wilton, but...
Aye, there's a connection there.
Aye, his kids are the same blood as me. And I found that out purely because of you guys. Because if you had took me up there that day.
The whole family thing, you're dead right, you said there, you know. I mean, we just spoke there about Colin Steen, you know. And I'm sitting there thinking that the link Colin had with Ibrox's disaster was Margaret Ferguson died the day of Ibrox's disaster. She was the only female that died. And Margaret Ferguson knew Colin and his family, and she went to his house the week of the game with a teddy bear. And
because Colin's wife had no long
that's right
a baby.
And says, "You score a goal for me at the weekend." Colin scored. Margaret never came back.
That's just strange.
It
wasn't until after that I all started to gel together why Colin was so interested in the restoration thing, the restoration project. And we went through, there's a stone to Margaret Ferguson, of course, in New Ravenside Cemetery, but it's a memorial bench there, and that was weather beaten, so we got that taken away. Again, a Rangers supporter, I specialise in these benches. I mean, what's the chances of that happening? The guy took it away to his workshop in Hart Hill, stripped it all back, re-varnished it, put it back as good as new, and that was Margaret Ferguson's family touched with the project, and of course Colin Steen, which was an incredible link.
Yeah, these things just fascinating. You know, how does the universe spin for that to happen? That knock-on effect is quite incredible. Now, you mentioned that you took the Rangers directors out in the tour. I remember that. I remember that happening. That was not long after the regime change from memory.
Aye.
Apart from that, have you had any other really famous or well-known people that you've had in your tours?
Davy Wilson, the late great Davy Wilson came along with his family and did the tour, and we tend to bump into them, and more specifically the Barcelona Bears, when we're doing my presentation. Even as Dave Smith came along to a couple, yeah, didn't he?
I still laugh at that. Obviously, it's kind of similar ages and that, and Barcelona is the greatest achievement, the players and that. And you were a kid growing up, and you were looking up to these guys and that. They're like that to you, and that. And fucking Colin Steen's talked to me.
It's absolutely incredible.
I mean, it's Willie Johnson.
Yeah. A Barcelona Bear anniversary dinner for them a couple of years back, and just walked into the hotel for you and into the bar, and I heard the voice saying, "How are you doing?" And I looked and it was called, "How's the restoration project going?" Straight away, you know, and I was like, that guy actually remembered. And I crossed, you know, and he's like, "Do you need any help? If you need any help, just speak to me. I'll get things done for you." And that kind of stuff.
It still is a buzz.
It's just, honestly, I'm like, if you could understand what that means, yeah, to me as an individual and the project.
I think you probably underestimate the knock-on effects you've got in people's lives. Because Rangers is the passion for thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many people.
Aye.
And even the information that you guys have, you know, uncovered and you get out through your tour and through the roadshows, you probably underestimate the respect that gains you as people. That, you know, you're just doing what you were doing pre-2007, finding information, getting out because of your passion and desire to learn about the subject matter. But I don't think you probably underestimate the knock-on effect he's having others.
The story's that good, by the way. That's the thing. There's that many stories out there that have never been told. Ian mentioned, even just the wee family things, like Ian mentioned James McIntyre, nickname was Tuck. He's one of the early players. He was in the second wave. He was a captain, committee guy. He was well-loved. Can tell you loads of stories. We went and says, we found his grave in Craigton across for George Nelson's, right? We'll get that fixed up. That'll be magic. All it needs is just cleans and relettered. So that magic. And then the wee boy died in Craigton. And the council went on a sweeping shove test. So we went back to see it. And there was fucking Tuck Stone was done, right? We'll get that fixed back up that night. So once, it was one Valentine's Day, we went back to Craig to do a few things, and we noticed the stone been put back up. So we left a note, or Ian left a note.
Had it been fresh?
Because it was family there, aye. Well, she left a note, and it turned out it was his Tuck's granddaughter, Vivian. It's an older lady, but she got in contact with us, and that, So we arranged to meet her. She gave us photographs of him in an older age. He was a member of the bowling club, the Bella Houston Bowling Club. That was based just next to the Servicemen's Club at the motorway.
Yeah, yeah.
It was there, and he lived in the corner for it and that. I mean, so, and in return, I was getting her hundreds of articles about Tuck. And there was one for 1891. The Buffalo Bills were in Duke Street at this time, right? It was Wild West Show.
Was it the real Buffalo Bill or just a cowboy from Duke Street?
No, it was a...
There's still a few Buffalo Bills up Duke Street.
a few Indians. And it was like me, the article says, this time Tuck had finished playing, but he owned the pub, the one Natch and Oval got. So he owned that pub. And he was getting a team together, Republicans, Tom Valens, George Gillespie, him to play against the Cowboys for Buffalo Bills, Wild West Show. And his negotiations with Buffalo Bill.
Crazy.
Buffalo Bill. She says, but the Buffalo Bill. She says, your granddad was pals with Buffalo Bill. Just blew her mind. Amazing.
These things are just weird things like that. Strange things that you know, this Rangers guy ends up, you know, a relationship with Buffalo Bill. But did the Cowboys turn up with an oval football, or did they know what they were doing?
Again, never went ahead. I never went ahead in negotiations here. Like Buffalo Bill replied in a letter saying, look, guys, we don't know what you're doing.
But then he...
Did referee a game at Celtic Park from the Wild West Show?
Buffalo Bill.
Tuck McIntyre, you referee.
The world's first Masonic referee.
But that was the thing as well.
Allegedly not the last.
Aye. The Masonic hall where Tuck Lodge was a member of, or he was a member of, is still there. And it's where the grounds were. And a lot of the Cowboys Indians joined that Masonic Lodge.
So I wasn't joking there.
That's a story. That's a book in itself.
We did a presentation of that Masonic Lodge.
Aye. So it's, I think it's St. Mark's, is it the one that he was in? And the Cowboys and Indians joined the...
Did they use a square compass or a teepee as an emblem? Did they?
A tomahawk.
Buffalo Bill did end up appearing at Ibrox, say, for a game.
Aye, he did. Aye.
And... I think he was getting slated for the length of his hair. One of the reports he would read said, you know, and appeared in the pavilion, Tom Valens was there, it said, with his 18-year-old son Harold up on his shoulders. His Buffalo Bill came on to the field range, were playing Queen's Park, I think, that day. But incredible.
They had whiskers as well, did they? So we would never have got a game at the time. So see all the stories, not necessarily ones you've found, right? It might be. But out all the stories about Rangers from founding fathers up to, you know, moving to Ibrox and the early history there. What's your personal favourites? What's the ones that get you in here?
For me, we covered it earlier on, but for me, it's the age of them and their sheer will and determination to succeed and make sure Rangers kept moving forward. For me, that stands out above it all. The legislators and the people that run football today can do what they like, you know, with the rules and bend this and do it and change that and bring in things like VAR. But at the end of the day, the whole ethos of football is about that self-determination to succeed and win. And that's exactly what those kids did back in the 18s. But we say often, you know, we go by Kelvin Grove Park, that's when the first strolling first discussed the possibility of forming their own football club. All it could have taken was one of them to say, it's a lousy idea, we'll go do something else. What would have happened? But they didn't. And they stuck at it. And they say, Wally Dunlop says they were doing their training at 6 nights a week, keeping Rangers moving forward, fundraising, you know, and they wanted to take on the best. They were writing to Queen's Park, send down your first team. They refused. You know, we'll send down our second team. We're not playing your second team. We want to play your first team. That whole ethos of football will never change, you know, and we've seen it at the weekend, just last Saturday at Ibrox, that Rangers team that looked like a new team, but they had a will to win, and they weren't going to be beaten Saturday, and that's been through our club since those founders put the building blocks in place, and that, for me, is always the thing that gets me excited.
Yeah,
you know, we'll go along to a tour, we're going to be telling a new group this wonderful, wonderful story, and people come up to us during the tour or after it and say, I had no idea about their age. No idea, you know.
That to me is probably one of the biggest things that you guys have gave me, because we all knew it was four guys. Mm-hmm. But when I learned the age of them, and I'm thinking, hold on a minute,
That is incredible that they actually get past the first game or the first year as kids and children.
Yeah.
And then when you factor in the first Scottish Cup, wasn't it that long? You know, there were still some of them under 21-year-old and were, you know, around about 21-year-old, I suppose.
So you're talking about youngest. 17 and stuff like that with the first one. We just didn't get into the first one, but I think the name change was that was part of the kind of thing that was happening then, because I think the reason why we changed from being Western, like I said, was the Western Cricket Club decided we're entering the Scottish Cup. We've got guys who are going to be in the committee of the Scottish Cup. So we're having a football team in the Scottish Cup. And I think that's why we had to change our name from Western. At that, or about that same time, that September 1873, October.
And again, the report in 1873, when the Scottish Football Association was formed, the Rangers didn't receive an invite to join because they weren't being taken seriously.
Aye.
With clubs such as Queen's Park, but again, it could have been easily used as an excuse. Oh, come on, we're wasting our time here. But no, they stayed and they kept working hard until they were accepted, which is a brilliant story on its own.
I think, and obviously, you do know that I run a kids' football team now, and see the life lesson that should be able to be used for the current generation, because the current generation, everything's instant. If it doesn't happen instant, they don't That's want. Right. Expectations, a lot of,
no, wrong, not interested a lot of kids, well,
there, yeah, good kids. Know. Sometimes I think kids get a bad rep. They're not all the same, but so the generalisation is they want instant success because they're used to seeing it on the TV. Well, these programmes where you sing one good song and Simon Cowell makes you a millionaire. And I think the life lessons that we could teach the next generation from those four boys is incredible. So, what's your highlight of the Rangers story?
I've got a couple of wee funny ones that I quite like. I like the one that we tell on the tour. We were playing Celtic in the cup final in 1893. We weren't fancied at all. They were a strong team then, and they were all gathered outside Tom Balance's club, Viceroy, basically, waiting to find out the score. And there was runners would come. It was wee boys, and this wee boy, they described him as an urchin, turns up, there's 3 man at Rangers and that. They obviously didn't believe him, so they set about him. And he was heard to say, stay between indeed if it's not true. Rangers will beat Celtic.
You know, that's before radio and television had been invented. So that's today's Viceroy Bar, which was Tom Balance's club restaurant, and the supporters would start to gather out there near the end of the game, waiting a runner. If you went to the match, wouldn't a runner either come for Hampden or Ibrox, and that's what happened to that poor kid. They believed him, so they say about
the, other one was I always laugh at this one, but it's slightly sad. But George Gillespie, he finished playing. Now, see me look across the map. Was it Gourock first, then Greenock, or is it Greenock?
You go down Greenock, then Gourock.
Right. So it was a Sunday. His mother lived.
That's the lads on him coming out. You see that there? Because the next door's lads,
eh? So what was it? What's the wee village after Roseneath, heading west? Gary went there. Anyway.
It's called Craigan.
Kilcraigan, right. So George Gillespie's mother lived in Kilcraigan. She ran a hotel. But right, she was on her deathbed. And this was a Sunday and George got windy. Right, okay. So he jumped the train to Greenock. Walked from Greenock to Gourock, gets to the bar. I says, right, can somebody take me out? And they're like, oh, no, there's no boats, and like that, because there's a har, big strong har, and you can't go out there and that. Would somebody take me? No. And the guy that owned the hotel says, look, take my boat if you want. Okay, then I'll jump that, you know. So he starts rowing across.
A rowboat,
right? So I don't know how many miles it is, right? But it's directly across. So he's like, right, he starts rowing across, and quite fogging the har, you know. I'll just keep blowing my whistle because there's going to be paddle steamers coming up in here. So he's blowing his whistle as he's rowing out. And he says, halfway across, the boat swung a leak. So what did he do? He starts bailing out his bowler hat. Eventually gets across and all that. He's more survived him getting there. I'm creating that. And I think at the end of that, he says, but the following week, his mum died. And I was like, all that effort, everyone across, bailing out with the bowler hat, blowing the whistle.
George Gillespie's part of that 1877 team. He's buried up in Lamb Hill.
Aye.
We cleaned his stone. In fact, his family, which his granddaughter gave us, his great-granddaughter, they came across from America. They contacted
Canada.
They were doing their own family tree onto Google, and our website came up. And they contacted us, and it was Barbara and Emil.
That's right.
They were related, and they came all the way across from Vancouver. It was, in fact, they came all the way across. We got them in the car and took them up to where George Gillespie lived in Glasgow, where he was buried, and then a wee stadium tour. So the project Touching Family, that's really special.
No, I think your story is incredible. What happens next?
We just keep going. We've got presentations lined up over the next few weeks all over the country. Again, that was a concept. Back in 2013-14, it's becoming more and more apparent that a lot of supporters, buses, places like Aberdeen and Fort Wall, Peterhead, everything is about getting to Ibrox and Matchday and home again. You couldn't expect people to stay overnight just to do the Founders Trail. So we thought, well, let's take the story out to them. And we constructed a roadshow and take it out via screen, and we tell the story. And we've got bookings covering us for the next few weeks and months.
Aye.
And the Founders Trail is continuing to sell out. But again, it's just, I get the impression from time to time that people think, I'm not going to bother, it's always sold out. But spaces become available regularly as people realise they're booked. They've got something else on, they'll move date. And we're just constantly slotting dates in. What we always try to emphasise is, on the weekend of a match, Rangers, of course, can't play twice. They can't play the Saturday or Sunday. If the Rangers game gets moved to the Sunday for live TV, we move to the Saturday, and vice versa. So it's never cancelled. It'll always run.
That's this Saturday as well, isn't it?
Just keeps going on and on. The restorations
as well on the back of it. So the two of you, I'm trying to guess, are probably about 30, 35 year old.
He's a Bremo in my 20s.
I had hair when I started.
you had hair? But I think, let's look into the future. You're 70, you're 80, you're more able or willing. Desire to do them, after a desire will still be there. Aye. I take it. But what's the progression for the Founders Trail as time goes on?
Well, I've got a son and two grandsons there, and I'm really hoping that they'll eventually step into my shoes. You know, when I kind of dropped the idea as a kind of joke to my son a couple of years ago, nope, I'll not be doing that. But if I look back when I was 28, 29, 30, I couldn't have done this either. As I said to me back at the start, you know, with that very brief meeting, Gordon said that somebody's going to need to do the tour again, it's not going to be me. You know, and I was like, well, I'm not doing it, but somebody had to do it, and we just done it. And it's just through a love and a belief in what we do that gives us the confidence.
See, we both have our drums within, you know, do the commentary and stuff like that. I do our research, and I mean, there's like the only thing we do together is the emails. You know, do the emails during the day. And I'll do my emails at night. So there's always going to be somebody answering an email. So we both do it at the same time. But we do it, you know, sort out the buses. And I'll do it. There's loads of different jobs. But we don't. The only job we share is emails, which works. I think that's what makes it work for us as well, is the fact that we concentrate on what we've got to do and it's done right.
You know, the website said, you know, Gordon's working on that, updating it constantly, you know, and he's yeah. fantastic at that. You know, people can just go on now and click onto the date and they get their email ticket through their confirmation, and it's easy as that. I mean, it was never like that. We were writing people's names down and who was cancelled and who was coming along, you know, but Gordon's his abilities kept chipping away and kept chipping away at that, you know, and we're proud to say that our Rangers website works, and it's very easily, it's very easy to use.
We don't
have a basket.
We don't rely on other people, right? Like, so the handouts, I did artwork on handouts, and I get them printed. Simple, right? You know what I mean? There's no, there's what we want, and I mean, somebody else is doing it. We have full control over the website, and anything goes out. So that's it. We both do plenty of jobs each, and we're good at the jobs that we do.
I think I've got to know the both of you probably over about a 10-year period, and I think one of the things that works for the organisation of the Founders Trail is these are two different characters with two different skill sets, and I think
100%, that's it. You know what I mean? It definitely, that's what I was trying to emphasise here as well. Like, so I do the kind of artwork and the technical side and the research side. When Ian organises stuff, do you know what I mean? The buses and updates of commentary, do you know what I mean? No, it definitely works. That's how it works, by the way, is because we have our own jobs. we've got to do it. Do you know what I mean?
So if anybody was interested in any groups getting the roadshow to them, what's the best way for people out there to contact you that don't already know where to find you?
Just drop us an email, founderstrail@gmail.com.
It's on the website, the links on the website and stuff like that.
And we send out the details.
And is there anything you need? Is there anything that the Rangers fans can help you with? Is there any extra jobs that you could do with a hand with that would make it even bigger, make your life a wee bit easier, maybe give you something back?
Yeah. I think it's really just our continuous support, which has been overwhelming. You know, come along, do the trail. With the guys coming along, you know, maybe with a couple of friends and saying, I'm going to come back and do this again. I'm going to bring my son with me because he's got to hear this story. He's got to have an understanding, and they do come back. Some people, again, you highlighted yourself earlier on about the wealth of information, maybe having to do it, you know, the second time. You know, it's the books here, of course, which people can read at their leisure. Mm-hmm. But no, it's really just to continue giving us their fantastic support through the restoration project with the donations that keeps that moving, attending the road shows and coming along to the Founders Trail and getting an understanding of exactly what Rangers Football Club means and how it all came about. It's highlighted during this. It didn't come about all by accident. It was with the hard work of those boys that made sure that we are sitting here today.
Because I always get the impression as well. I always like to think that at the end of the tour, before they go to Ibrox, people walk away with a different look at the club. They see the club differently because it really does open people's eyes to the actual whole organisation. We suffer a lot from bad propaganda about the club and bad the Protestants thing and blah 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 all that, but it's not like that. The club is just started as young boys forming a club and pushing it forward. Everything else came later, and that was just a kind of, for me, it was a city split in two anyway. That was going to happen. We're going to pick our sides, but a lot of people seem to think that the club was born as a product. It's not. It's just young boys, and it could have been like a bowling club with committees that are short as a president.
As we highlight,
and that's it. And work hard to keep their new club going.
The love of football and the pursuit of sporting excellence. That's what they've done. That was their driving force. We spoke earlier about during the Spiv years, if you like, and people were literally broken back then in a real panic, and we would get people walking away from Creighton. Creighton's our final stop before Ibrox, and saying, I've managed to reconnect with my club now. Mm. I thought I was losing it. I thought it was slipping through my fingers, but I managed to reconnect. We'll never lose this club. I said, no, we won't. We won't lose it. We'll always be there, you know. But again, don't get me wrong, we sailed pretty close to the wind a couple of times during that period. And again, thanks to yourself and Sons of Struth, you know, we've made sure that we got back to where we should have been.
I think something's just hit with me there, what you were saying back in those days, particularly my own journey, 2012 through to 2015. And you've probably helped that without me even considering at the time. We having all this knowledge about the club and the foundations, the formative years of the club, and been desperate not to lose that. So I hadn't thought about it before until you were saying at the same time people were coming away from Creighton.
Yeah.
And I think subconsciously I would have been that person as well. Thanks for that as well.
Yeah.
But listen, I think the story that these kids created, that you have been able to now inform the Rangers fans and finding out all this new information and you know, making the story more visible is phenomenal, the job you have done in such a relatively short space of time. Because you'd think 2009 when you started doing the trail, today it's not that big a chunk of time. The job you're doing is fantastic. And what I didn't want to do today was get you on and let's just talk about the history of Rangers. We could do 10 podcasts about that. It was more, and we've done it, and I can only thank you for that. It's find out about you, how did it happen, you know, how does it evolve and all that. So, you know, I can only thank you for two things. One, the job you've done to help me in my journey as a Rangers fan.
Aye.
But coming on this show today and sharing it with me. So, guys, thank you very much.
No, thanks, Craig.
All the best going forward.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thanks for bringing us up.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Craig.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.